Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
You're listening to a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. If you want to listen to us in real time, you can stream our show live weekdays at 9 and 11 a.m. Central. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
I'm Carrie Miller. This is NPR News. Now a discussion about why women athletes are getting jerked around on pay and why the fans have something to do with that. If you're questioning my jerked around description, here's a few numbers for context. Out of the 100 highest paid athletes in the world last year, only one, Serena Williams, is a woman. Golden Warriors star Steph Curry will make over $200 million in the next 5 years. You know what the top star in the WNBA will make? She's lucky if she squeezes out $100,000. Right now you're thinking, well, that's about ticket sales and sponsors and advertisers and skill. And yes, it's also about plain old deeply embedded inequity. More on that in a minute. As our guests join us, I'd like to hear from you. As a fan of women's sports, basketball, soccer, tennis, and more, do you think the women's teams and leagues get the kind of promotion and support that they need and deserve? And if you're the parent of a daughter who dreams about being a professional athlete, what do you tell her about this pay inequity? So as a fan of women's sports, I want to know if you think the teams and the women's leagues get the kind of promotion and support they deserve. And if you're the parent of a daughter who dreams about being a professional athlete, what do you say about, what do you think about this pay inequity? Here's the number, 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828. I'm on Twitter with you, at Carrie, K-E-R-R-I, NPR. Mary Jo Kane is with us. She's the director of the Tucker Center at the University of Minnesota with me in the studio. Really good to see you again. Welcome.
Welcome to you, too, and thank you for inviting me.
Gigi Marvin is with us. She's a three-time Olympic forward for the U.S. Women's National Hockey Team, and she joins us today from Boston. Gigi, welcome. Really good to have you on the show. Thank you.
Hi, yeah, thanks for having me.
Mary Jo, my impression after looking at the salary numbers across sports is that no matter the professional sport, no matter the professional athlete, women always make less and they make substantially less. Are there any examples to the contrary of that?
Well, the only example that would even be close would be women's professional tennis. And that's only because people like Billie Jean King early on said we should be paid for the same, pretty much the same as what men make, especially in the majors. But other than that, in all women's professional leagues, they do make, as you pointed out in your intro, not just less, but substantially less by millions and millions of dollars on average.
So, Gigi, when you hear the argument, I think we will, well, this is about ticket sales and this is about sponsorship and it's about skill. The men are just more interesting to watch. What's the answer to that?
Yeah, I don't agree with it, but I think the answer is just simply, you know, you put your money where your mouth is, and you put, if you kind of provide for a boy, so I play for USA Hockey, and so what is provided for the men and for a young boy is not even close. And I, you know, we have so many numbers that have been laid out, but for the development of a girl, it's not even close, yet the membership fee is the exact same, or the sales for different things, but so you're charging the same as to be a member of USA Hockey, yet what's offered and provided is completely different, or around marketing. And so the tough thing is, yeah, you know what? Women don't have a lead. Women don't really have much fan support. And I've heard it a lot with women's college basketball, the same pattern is you need to start somewhere. And if we have the ability and these massive machines like the NHL and the NBA and some remarkable, I mean, they have a huge stretch, a worldwide stretch. Why not take just a fraction of it and use that towards showcasing these amazing women athletes? Because my teammates are like, their strength, their speed, their stamina, they're not these, you know, casual, random athletes who don't dedicate every day of their life to this, their craft. They're phenomenal, and they do that. They're not just kind of sit on your couch and, you know, everyone hears about beer league and just kind of playing every now and then. No, these women literally dedicate their lives, and you kind of touched on the women's basketball salaries. Like, the same thing. Those athletes are outstanding, especially in Minnesota. I mean, the Lynx are remarkable. And so I think I think it just starts with the willingness. You know, that's what we face within our USA Hockey, is just the straight up willingness to even start to go there. There's just such a refusal to even think about how can we market, how can we promote, and how can we develop these young athletes, because they just didn't even choose to do that.
Mary Jo, I think Gigi used the right word here, the machine, and the machine cranks up very early in development and promotion for young boy athletes. It simply doesn't happen for young women.
Well, but it's happening increasingly as a result of being two generations removed from Title IX. And I would like to place this just a little bit in an historical perspective, speaking of Title IX, which was passed in 1972. I think that and I totally understand why people want to do a direct comparison of women's and men's sports. I get that. But I think it's really important to understand, at least from my point of view, is that this is a false equivalency in this sense. Women's sports didn't really get off the ground until, even again, two generations removed from Title IX. And so I think that you're trying to, it's not an apples to apples comparison. It's really an apples to oranges comparison, because, for example, comparing the WNBA to the NBA is like comparing a tech startup company to Apple.
I want to say that I'm really glad you mentioned this. The WNBA League was created in 1997. Right? So
yeah.
So what you're saying is really important here. The development of these leagues is far behind, which doesn't mean that, well, then they have to wait for their turn for investment, right?
No, it doesn't mean that at all. But for example, a sports economist named Dave Barry, who's published a lot in Forbes magazine, made the point, that the NBA, speaking of these two comparisons, is in its second 72nd season. And the WNBA last year averaged about 8,000 fans per game. The NBA did not reach that 8,000 attendance average mark until its 26th season.
And everybody waited and invested
exactly
for the NBA.
Exactly. And I just think that if you look at the whole issue of Title IX, we've just moved in two generations. I mean, it's been lightning quick. We've gone from young girl, I'm a pre-Title IX tomboy, we've gone from young girls like me hoping that there is a team to young girls today hoping that they make the team. That doesn't mean that there aren't gender inequities that we shouldn't fight for, but I think it's always important to place this in a broader context.
Call here from Rebecca in St. Paul. Rebecca, you've got the WNBA on your mind?
Yes. And a lot of what I see, especially with the Lynx, is there is just not the media coverage. There are just phenomenal athletes on the Minnesota Lynx. I mean, how many Olympians are on there? And they just don't get the media coverage. So, for example, a couple of weeks ago, when Sylvia Fowles got the league record for rebounds, next morning, NPR, it was literally 30 seconds. And then it was a lead-in to an interview with a sports writer about a whole session about why the Minnesota Twins are losing. We have a phenomenal team.
I gotcha.
And even the media that's aware that there is not the same coverage is also perpetuating that,
yeah.
Not the same coverage.
Well said, Rebecca. Gigi, that must be, I mean, you must experience this as well, right? Big media focus on men's hockey. What's your perspective on this, on how important the media coverage ends up being?
Yeah, we've found that, I mean, the media coverage is huge, because obviously it's about awareness and increasing that. That's the first step. But thankfully, we live in a time now that there's social media. And so I think a lot of players have done a great job of trying to kind of build through, and we've done our own work in that. But I agree. I mean, just to give a small snapshot between USA Hockey, the women's hockey, like the Olympic team, the best women in the country, they don't even have a sales and marketing, you know, people directed towards that. Whereas if you look at the 17 and 18, aka the development teams for the men's side, they have 7 staff members just for the 17 and 18 team alone. And I mean, that kind of puts the discrepancy. We don't even have our own Twitter page. We don't have our own like the U.S. Women's Olympic team and the U.S. Women's National Team. And so simple things like that,
yeah.
We do get that all the time. Obviously, every 4 years come the Olympics, for 2 weeks, pretty much everyone wants to talk about it. But, you know, we don't live in just the 2 weeks of the Olympics. Like, we train year-round, which, a.k.a. also, we work year-round. And so it's kind of more about how do we take what's already provided, and I understand that, how do we take what's provided and use that toward and dedicate those same resources, or at least even give us one. Like, why not start now with one, two, and then build ourselves up to seven, just like what is given to not even the men's Olympic team, but simply their 17-year-old boys and 18-year-old boys.
Tara says on Twitter, I was an athlete through college, swim and hockey, and I'm from the beginning a Minnesota Lynx WNBA fan who's been yelling for years about abysmal salaries of WNBA players. Thank you for tackling the issue of women athletes getting rooked on financial compensation and promotion. And that is what we're talking about. When you look at the numbers, it is undeniable. There is a deep inequity when it comes to compensation for women in sports. We want to know why. Why don't the leagues invest? Why don't fans invest? I think fans have to take this on for ourselves as well. Where's all the sponsorship? What does it mean? And as the parents, perhaps, of a daughter who dreams about being a professional athlete, what do you say about this pay inequity as a fan? Do you think that the women's teams and the leagues get the kind of support and the promotion that they need and deserve? 800-242-2828, wherever you are in the region, 651-227-6000, and on Twitter at Carrie NPR, to Sarah in Minneapolis. Hi, Sarah. Thanks so much for waiting. Good to have you on the line.
Sure.
What do you want to say?
I think that you guys are really nailing it on the head. I think it's been really impressive, the partnership that, the Lynx have with the Timberwolves, and now the new Women's Hockey League has, the Whitecaps has with the Wild. But I think it just isn't enough. I think that people are afraid, and they don't think that the support for women's sports is there. But, I play on the Minnesota's professional women's football team, which now everyone's going to be like, Minnesota has a professional women's football team.
You just nailed it. Just what I was thinking. I didn't know that. So,
yeah.
So tell me what the story is here. When do you play? Where do you play?
We play, our home games are played at Simley High School in Invergrove Heights. And our season is April through July. And we're part of a bigger league called the Women's Football Alliance that has, I think, around 60 teams throughout the country.
Boy, way to go. Wow.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's an amazing opportunity. But each league is self-funded. And, for us, it's hard to find sponsors who are willing to put money behind a women's sport because they don't think that, the attendance is there, the interest is there. But our team has one of the biggest fan bases in the league. And it's still hard for us to get going. We dream of a sponsorship with the Vikings, but it's just not there.
Sarah, you've raised something, and I'm really glad you called to talk about sponsorships. What a circular problem this is, Mary Jo, because as Sarah just said, the sponsors won't come in until they see the fans, but the fans aren't going to come in unless there's more awareness and promotion. And some of that is about sponsorship. What do you do to break that?
Well, it is a vicious cycle. It also is the sort of $64,000 question in terms of the chicken and the egg. And to go back to, I think that the corporate sponsorship won't come in until they see more media coverage. And media coverage is going to say, well, people aren't interested, and that's reflected in the fact that there's no corporate sponsorship. So let's talk a little bit about the media. What we know in terms of data, and I'm a scholar, so I like to rely on data, we know that about 40% of all sports participants in this country are female. And we also know that in terms of Division I scholarship athletes, 43% of all scholarship athletes are female. Now, that's an extraordinary development, given that prior to Title IX, you didn't have teams, let alone athletic scholarships.
Right.
But what we also know is what the latest studies show is that overall, across the vast sports media landscape, women only get about 2-4% of all media coverage. So the media actually are underreporting women's interests. And I would argue that those kinds of numbers indicate that there is an enormous interest in women's sports, both in terms of attendance and participation and viewership. But when the media won't acknowledge that and underreports what's actually happening, then you have a situation where corporate sponsors stay away.
Gigi, when you talk with your fellow athletes and your fellow team members on the national hockey team, I'd really like kind of the inside view of what you say about the media coverage and how frustrating this is. Because I think you said a minute ago, sure, everybody's interested 2 weeks before the Olympics, but then, you know, then nothing.
Yeah, it's challenging, but I think I understand where we're at. That's, I think what you, your guest was mentioning earlier is we're not comparing to the 70 some years of existence that the NHL has had. Like, they started with six teams, and we're starting with five teams in the National Women's Hockey League, and there's seven teams in the Canadian Women's Hockey League, but you got to start somewhere. But for us, as far as marketing, I think it's amazing when you can do those partnerships. Perfect example for Minnesota is when the Minnesota Whitecaps, which is a women's professional team, is partnered with the Minnesota Wild, and the Wild is constantly tweeting or allowing the women's team to use their rink, and then therefore we'll have more access to, you know, Care 11 News or the variety of different, there's tons of news outlets in Minnesota. And so, I mean, that's huge. Just thinking about a same example with a startup company versus Google. Google, you're already attracting, and you already have a massive following. Then you kind of come under your wing. Same with the Wild. They have a phenomenal following. And just by simply partnering with that, and it's important to find other businesses and really wrap their heads around, hey, these women are phenomenal athletes, and they simply just need exposure and putting journalists or media members upon instead of just simply, you know, going every 4 years, which, to be honest, like, everyone has commented, everyone remembers an Olympic moment because they're so powerful. And just, I mean, I'm an athlete, and I still have these remarkable memories of watching as a fan when I was little. And to think that we capture that in only 2 weeks every 2 years, man, we could be capturing those powerful moments of perseverance, dedication, what women, or just even throughout the entire calendar year instead of just February or August. And I think Serena Williams does a phenomenal job with that as far as even sharing a story about now we have women who are pregnant and competing or have given birth and still coming back and playing at the highest level. Like, those are stories that need to be shared and communicated in addition to simply raising the awareness among women athletes and women's sports in general.
Mary Jo, I hear what Gigi is also saying about the men's leagues investing in the idea of this, right? And also investing in the exposure of this. I was reading something that the NBA commissioner told the New York Times. He said, for years, the NBA has underestimated the marketing investment that it takes to launch a new league. In other words, if the NBA had been as interested in the WNBA as they should have been, or as they were, right, in the NBA, I mean, what could have happened around the promotion of the WNBA? He's basically admitting that we didn't understand what it was take, and we didn't make the investment that is needed, and we still aren't.
Yeah, and I think that that's an absolutely critical point. And I want to go back in terms of some sort of historical perspective here. I think one of the things that we should ask ourselves is, again, given all these data and given the enormous growth that we see in women's sports since Title IX, and also the interest in women's sports when people are given an opportunity to watch and support women's sports, like in the Olympics every 4 years,
right,
the question then becomes, well, so what's going on? Why is it that, for example, the NBA is acting against its own financial interests?
Yeah,
that's
right.
The logical. Okay, so here's my analysis.
Yeah, what's your theory on that?
So if you have an institution like sports that for decades and decades and decades has been monopolized by a majority group, in this case, men, and especially given an institution that is so identified with maleness and masculinity, I mean, Title IX didn't come to be because men on the 19th hole in golf, you know, 45 years ago said, oh my God, what an oversight. We aren't giving half the resources to women. We got to do something about this.
Yeah.
So what has happened then is that on the one hand, you do have many men who support women's sports, especially the dads with daughters demographic. So I never wanted to dismiss that.
I'm seeing that on Twitter.
Okay.
Yes.
However, having said that, there is still enormous resistance to women's equality, because what has happened is that what was once a monopoly in one of the most powerful, important institutions in this culture has been that all-male sacred space has been penetrated, if you will, since Title IX by women. And so at the same time that you have lots of support for women going forward and supported by men,
yeah,
like Adam Silver in the NBA.
But there's also
you
resistance.
You also have resistance because of what it means for women to be equal in that realm.
On Twitter, my daughter's goal is to have sports help her pay for college. She's a basketball player. As a first-year teacher, she would make more or the same as a professional female basketball player in the USA. Overseas leagues pay better. I want to say about golf, Lydia Ko, youngest player to ever be ranked number one of either gender in 2015, she made less money than the male golfer who was ranked 25th in the world. If that isn't inequity, I don't know what is.
Let me give you one more. Asia Wilson, who was the number one draft pick in the WNBA this last year and plays for the Las Vegas Aces, what her salary is this year is $54,000, and she's the number one pick in the WNBA. Now, that said, as somebody like me, again, who's in the mid-60s, but we have a WNBA, and it's in its 22nd season, and it has had more corporate sponsorship, more media coverage, more fan attendance than ever in its history.
So it's
on the one hand, on the other.
Monica in St. Paul. Hey, Monica, thanks so much for waiting. What are you thinking about here?
I'm thinking about the fact that I'm not a sports person, one way or another, but I am a feminist, and my husband I really admire the fact that he will go to as many women's games as men's. He will see women's soccer the same way he sees men's soccer or women's hockey and come home and talk about it to our kids and talk about the athleticism and invite buddies. You want to go to a hockey game? And then they say, oh, wait, a women's hockey game? And he says, yeah.
Don't tell Gigi that. Uh-oh. Right. Monica, I think that's progress. Yeah. Right. You know, in the home, what your kids are hearing. I think that really matters. I appreciate the call. Let me go to Mackenzie in St. Paul. Hi, Mackenzie. Your
Hi.
Observation on this.
I am a rabid Lynx fan introduced to the team by my friend Rachel. And when we're talking about fans paying money and supporting the team, when the Lynx were in the finals, I couldn't find Lynx merchandise anywhere in the Twin Cities. I went to every store I could think of to support the team and wear the white. And I finally went to a Dick's Sporting Goods, and I could find stuff on Alabama's Roll Crimson Tide. What do I care about that when I'm a Lynx fan and nobody here will carry their merchandise? How am I supposed to support my team if nobody gives me the opportunity to do that?
Mary Jo, is that an issue?
Oh, I hear that all the time.
Really?
I absolutely hear that all the time. And again, it's a situation where I keep going back to Title IX. We were told for decades and decades that women weren't interested in sports, and even if they played, they wouldn't be any good. Well, guess what happened? We built them ballparks and playing fields all over this country, and they have come in unprecedented numbers. And I just would hope that the marketers and the controllers, the gatekeepers, if you will, of women's sports, get it and make those kinds of opportunities available for women and men. Because I should say that just like in men's sports, where it's about 60% to 40% men to women fans, in the women's sports, it's flipped. It's 60% women and 40% men. But there's a lot of men who follow women's sports, and men and women are desperate for that kind of merchandise.
Gigi, is that an issue for the women's national hockey team other than the 2 weeks before the Olympics?
Absolutely. We don't have any U.S. women's hockey. We don't have a U.S. women's national team store with where you can buy, for example, like, you know how you walk in the Wild locker room at XL Energy and you could buy a ton of different apparel, ton of different designs. You can get things like a keychain even. Man, that's something we talked about so much and so frequently because our friends and family want to represent the USA on their front and then their daughter or their sister or their cousin or whatever on their back. And so what we've had to do, because there's nothing provided as far as, you know, at home games sold for U.S. women specifically, we, the player, each 4 years before, like my three Olympics I've been to, we are the ones that have designed our own shirts in order to even use to, and we fund, use it to fundraise to help cover costs for our families to get to these Olympic Games. And so it's something where, like, kids, especially I coach and I run a hockey school for young girls and boys. And I mean, when they saw the t-shirts that we made this year, I mean, they ate it up. They want it. Just like this viewer went around the Twin Cities looking for Lynx stuff. And I'm like, it's there. I mean, you see so many women wearing Minnesota Vikings shirts. Then they love, they don't really even know football. And then all of a sudden you get the same market, like you said, the 60% women, 40% men. I mean, there's a desire for it. And especially for those who are passionate about the sport, but those who just kind of come alongside it, just like many examples of, say, women going along to just football games and not necessarily enjoying it, but loving the entertainment value of it. And we have that also. We have people who've come to our games kind of a little bit begrudgingly or with one of their friends, and then they just love the entertainment and they love the speed and they fall in love, but they don't have anything to kind of wear proudly or, and it doesn't, to support the our program or our team, and that's the highest level. Much less, you know, the other leagues.
Gigi, I wish you well with the school and the team, and really a pleasure to have you on the show today. Thank you. Thanks for the insight from your perspective as an athlete.
Yes, thanks so much for having me.
Gigi Marvin, three-time Olympic forward for the U.S. Women's National Hockey Team. Joel says, I'm the father of a girl, 7 years old, 7 years ago, I decided to watch the WNBA as my primary sport. How do you tell a girl you can do anything and continue watching only men's sports? Men and women need to watch where their money goes and what it says. I have a feeling you'd agree with that, Mary Jo, on the 30 seconds I have left.
I would say hear, hear, Joel. But we do support women's sports, and I'm just asking all of those who resist to come along and go women's sports and go Gophers.
Laurel says, hey, Carrie, what if NPR decided to take on this issue in a serious way? If we really care about women in sports, why not pledge to make 43% of airtime about sports dedicated to women? If media is a problem, why not be part of the solution?
This was a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. To add your voice to our discussion, you can call in at 800-242-2828 or tweet Carrie at KERRINPR. And if you miss us live, you'll find all of our shows by subscribing to this podcast. If you have questions, you can email us at talk@npr.org.